Thank you very much, Bill. William Crystal teaches political philosophy and American government at the University of Pennsylvania. He has long been associated with the American Spectator, and he has done a stint in the political arena, having served as the Associate Director of Issues Research in the successful campaign of Senator Moynihan. Some of the senior citizens present may remember Colonel Stoopnagel's description of the renowned professor's son of a renowned professor father as a blip off the old chalk. Humor was simpler in those days and kinder. Today's blip, Bill Crystal.
Flattering introduction. I suppose I should follow Mr. Evers' example by beginning by declaring that I do drink hard liquor. I even smoke occasionally. I'm often inconsiderate to my spouse or wife. And I don't think I would have voted to condemn either Socrates or Jesus. As a teacher who's accustomed to discussing books, I was both excited and perplexed when I was asked to be on this distinguished panel to discuss the important question of conservatism and libertarianism directly, without a text to lean on. Perhaps I should have boldly seized this opportunity to speak for once in my own name, to deliver myself of my deepest opinions. But instead, I consulted both my rational self-interest and my traditional custom, and looked for a text that I might base my remarks on. Let me take as my text, therefore, Friedrich Hayek's essay, to which Bob Nisbet referred, Why I'm Not a Conservative, which is printed at the end of his The Constitution of Liberty. I regard Hayek as one of the most thoughtful libertarian writers, and though I know other libertarians differ with him on various points, I trust my remarks will be sufficiently general to be applicable to libertarian thought as a whole. I want to discuss Hayek's own views, as set forth in that essay, rather than his critique of conservatism, or even his more interesting critique or rejection of what he calls crude rationalism, crude rationalism as a basis for libertarianism, in favor of what he calls a free process of spontaneous growth. This rejection seems to differentiate Hayek from other libertarians, but I don't believe it's a fundamental difference. Indeed, I'd like to suggest that libertarians, including even Mr. Hayek, fail to appreciate the importance for politics of opinion, of convention, which is to say habits, customs, beliefs, in contrast to reason. Libertarians seem to fail to appreciate the distinctively political in politics, the fact that politics is and will always be the element of opinion, that a political society cannot be based simply on reason or on what Mr. Hayek substitutes for reason, a free process of spontaneous growth. An evolution, what Hayek also calls an evolution free from government interference, which allows for the advance of knowledge. No less than the so-called rationalist does Hayek believe in progress and enlightenment, albeit in a gradual and evolutionary enlightenment. That is why Hayek is a libertarian and is not a conservative. As Hayek says, speaking of himself, a libertarian has an essentially forward-looking attitude, believing not just in the possibility of intellectual progress, but also in the corresponding progress of society. Hayek assumes that political society can, at least in principle, move towards or be brought towards the light, that its principles can be based on the truth. He therefore states in his essay that the maxim, don't change things at rest, let sleeping dogs lie. That maxim may at times be a wise maxim for the statesman, but it cannot satisfy the political philosopher. The political philosopher, Hayek says, cannot accept arrangements merely because current opinion sanctions them. For the chief need of the world, according to Hayek, is, quote, to free the process of spontaneous growth from the obstacles and encumbrances that human folly has erected. I wonder, is this reasonable? Doesn't political philosophy teach us, above all, that every political society embodies to some degree, and in its own way, some form of human folly? That a liberal or libertarian society, while preferable to many others, perhaps to all others, is itself based on certain conventions, certain opinions, on certain arrangements that are not simply just or free or natural. This is by no means to suggest the abdication of reason from politics. Because all political societies are based on opinions, does not mean some opinions are not truer or more praiseworthy or more conducive to human well-being than others. But it does mean that the hope of transcending opinion in favor of a society based either on rationalism or on free spontaneous growth is a misleading hope and a doomed hope. In a way, this false hope is the hope of every political society, of every political movement. For every political movement claims to be based on more than opinion. It claims to embody the truth. But it is a hope that thoughtful men, on the whole, should guard against rather than encourage, because it can be a dangerous hope. Hayek asks us to approve of political arrangements not simply because they exist or because they work tolerably well, but in his own words, only if they are desirable in themselves. Do any political arrangements truly meet the standard? Does not propounding such a standard lead either to a cynical and exaggerated disillusionment with politics or to a moderate utopianism? Or perhaps to both? At times in the Constitution of Liberty, it's fair to say, Hayek does seem to acknowledge that every society is based on convention or opinion. A free society, perhaps less dramatically so than others, but nonetheless no less decisively so. But on the whole, Hayek speaks as if a free society, a society devoted to liberty, is both practicable and desirable as such. He has what he himself calls a faith in the spontaneous forces of adjustment. If only government would leave the society, and particularly, of course, the economy, alone. Is not this faith as much a faith as conservatives' alleged faith in the wisdom of the past? Hayek assumes that this spontaneous growth is desirable in itself, or that it will produce results that are desirable in themselves. I believe he can only assume this because he refuses to confront the question of what the desirable in itself, the desirable as such, is. To provide such a standard in a substantive way, beyond merely setting forth principles on the basis of which we can all agree to disagree, like the libertarian principles of not interfering in other people's lives, to set forth the principle of what's desirable in a substantive way would show both that no society is capable of living up to that standard of the desirable in itself, but it would also provide, I believe, more substantial guidance for how to reform society as it is, for what to preserve and what to change, and how to change what should be changed. Hayek suggests at one point in his little essay that the task of political philosophy is to mold or to reform public opinion. One might say that he tends to collapse theory and practice, philosophy and politics. I think this is generally true of libertarians. They want politics to follow directly from theoretical principles. Hayek refuses to acknowledge the unbridgeable gap between philosophy and society. That is, the inevitable fact that politics will be based on opinion, not on the truth. On opinion, that means on some version of human folly, something incorrect. What is true of Hayek is all the more true of less moderate libertarians. His hopes for politics are too high, but his standard for measuring politics, for the desirable in itself, is too low. I draw one practical conclusion from this argument. If Hayek's faith in free spontaneous growth is a faith, if libertarianism is as much or more than conservatism, a doctrine that abstracts from certain aspects of the truth or that takes certain things for granted that are questionable, as I say, if Hayek's faith is really a faith, then it's just as well that there be no fusion between conservatism and libertarianism, and certainly that one not prevail over the other. Hayek asserts at the beginning of his essay that there is danger in the confused condition which brings the defenders of liberty and the true conservatives together in common opposition to developments which threaten their different ideals equally, the Philadelphia Society. While intellectual confusion is always undesirable, this practical alliance seems to me more fortunate and healthy than dangerous. It does not, I believe, weaken the fight against common enemies, that the fight is fought by an alliance of conservatives and libertarians rather than by a united movement. And the preservation of the distinction between conservatism and libertarianism allows each to check the more extreme tendencies, the more extreme errors of the other. And it allows a wise politician, who seeks to defend and foster liberty, to appeal to one or the other, conservatism or libertarianism, as the times or as the issue or as the issues warrant. A fully satisfactory account and defense of liberty, such as that presented, I believe, by Tocqueville, for example, would transcend or comprehend what is true in both libertarianism and conservatism. But that is not the stuff which political movements or intellectual doctrines are made of.